Welcome to Keep It 100 Podcast with Sean and Krista Smith. Join us in this space where we take on real issues with real insight and real inspiration. This podcast is for those not looking for temporary relief to change circumstance, but revelation to forever change lives.
Hey, Keep It 100 Tribe, welcome to another episode of Keep It 100 with Sean and Krista.
Hey, everyone. We're so excited to be with you for yet another episode of Keep It 100. We're always excited to be with our tribe. With that being said, we have a really cool event we want to invite you to. Probably you've heard it, but in case you haven't, want you to know that June 14th, this coming Friday, we are going to be having our Momentum Night, but it's not just going to be any Momentum Night. Every single month we gather, but this one we're calling our Momentum Fire Night. And
why are we
calling them fire, baby?
Fire because we have a special guest, Russell Johnson.
We love Russell.
Literally a man on fire.
He is senior pastor of a multi-campus movement called Pursuit. And we've had the joy and the privilege of ministering there. And we've ministered at a couple of their campuses. They've opened up even an additional campus up there that we haven't ministered yet. But we've ministered at their main campus and the University of Washington campus with all the young people. And they are really seeing truly a move of God. What's happening in the Northwest is so special. We're so expecting because he's a true revivalist. We're bringing in another revivalist to partner with what we believe God is doing. And so it's going to be a night of breakthrough. It's going to be a night of revelation. It's going to be a night of impartation. We're going to pray for the sick. We're going to go for what we always do at our Momentum Night. And what's really cool is we're doing it in Dublin at Dublin New Life Church, which is actually our home church. It's where we attend. And it's where we've had all our momentum conferences in January, where we've had our master classes, or at least a couple of our master classes. And we have had such incredible breakthroughs specifically in that building, in that location. It's home to us. And we're just so expecting because when we've gathered there, it's always been really special and God's breathed on it. And so we just want to invite you to come and join us in Dublin, California this coming Friday, June 14th, 7 p.m. Anyone's welcome. It's free. There's no charge. And we're telling you, get in the room because God's going to encounter us.
Yes, you want to get in the room and invite somebody and help us get the word out. Hey, gang, we're so excited about the topic that we're going to be covering. We're continuing this series, this thought, this conversation on tearing off toxicity. But specifically on this episode, we're talking about anger gone bad. And this is just such right now a subject that is just so pertinent, so prevalent at the same time. When we were thinking about this topic, we were thinking about right now, even though it's summertime and universities are out, I just read an article today, Boo, just the Hamas-Israel protest things are still going on.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. I saw another article where there was a pride parade and a anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas people who were protesting disrupted the entire pride parade. I thought that's very interesting because many people would look at that as two groups that are on the left. So two groups on the left were angry at each other. Obviously, we're right on the heels of the Trump ruling. And I don't know if you've seen social media on that. People got angry over that, lost their mind.
Yeah.
People are familiar with the WNBA. Caitlin Clark got shoved down. It was a basketball play by another gal off a team. It really wasn't a basketball play. And people started to make it a racial thing. People started to make it this thing. And it just got crazy. And with the new Bad Boys for Life film coming out, I guess it's number 4. People are thinking about Will Smith. And there's still this talk of, will he ever come back after the infamous slap where he got so angry he stood up and slapped Chris Rock. And Chris Rock even mentioned it. But really, when you bring it to the street that we live on, we see people today, they're angry with their circumstances. People are angry at the government. People are angry at their bosses and their coworkers. People are angry at their family. They're angry at their neighbors. People are angry at God. People are just angry today.
You know, yeah. You know, and they're angry at themselves. I think there's a lot of people that are angry at themselves. I think anger is across the board when we look at people's life. And if you look at beyond even our lives, and Sean made reference to this, and you take a panoramic view of our country, you know, the FBI is reporting a rise in violent crime, Sean, which is crazy. The Federal Aviation Administration, which is obviously the airlines and the flight, you know, world, which is where we live, that's reporting a higher than ever numbers of unruly passengers. Thank goodness you and I have not really been on flights where that stuff's gone down.
Remember that some woman, was that you or I, but some woman, she got a little belligerent and it was cussing and kind of got a little angry about giving up space.
That's true. She got a little crazy. Yeah, but I guess because it wasn't like volatile, and then they told her to like knock it off and sit down, and she did. So okay. It just kind of, you're right, yeah. though. She was a little crazy.
Yep.
But we're seeing this kind of across the nation. There's an anger that's yeah. in the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And it's being backed up by polling. It's being yeah. backed up by statistics. It's being backed up by yeah. data that we're seeing. In early September, this is interesting. These are just some interesting stats that kind of prove what yeah. we're talking about today. That 3 in 4 respondents told CNN that they felt at least somewhat angry at the way things are going in the country today. Mm. And some of you listening today might be going, I relate to that. That's actually how I feel. Well, we mm-hmm. want to talk about that today. And in CBS, they did a news poll and 54% said that the biggest threat to America's way of life was other people in America.
Wow.
It was not economic or foreign threats or natural disasters, which I thought was really interesting.
Yes.
Right? It was actually other people. It wasn't like maybe the bigger social or environmental yeah. or political
yeah.
in issues.
And other people in their nation, in light of a lot of wars going on and terrorism, people are saying it's the people in this country that are my problem, which shows the whole blame game victim mentality. You're so right.
It's really true. And I think what we have to understand is America has changed. Not all change is bad though, right? But America has changed. And because America doesn't necessarily look like for some people the way they want it to look, that they're angry with that. Others, it is looking more the way they want. But at the end of the day, we're in this nation to bring a move of God. And regardless if we're facing darkness, there's always hope when you carry Jesus within you. I just want to say that to establish as we're talking anger, you're even hearing these things and you're getting triggered. We want to keep pointing you back to Jesus, because here's the truth. It's no secret that our country, our world, it is experiencing a lot of evil, a lot of injustice, fighting, and there's, you know, stats and crime and drugs and murder and all the things have risen. And it's a result of actually an underlying issue. And that's the area of anger. The world is becoming angrier.
Yep.
And it's no surprise. You know, you can look at people just driving down the road. You can look at people at your workplace. You can look at people
yep.
standing in line at the grocery store or putting gas in their car. And they just have scowls. And
oh, me mugging you at Costco.
You know what I love? True. I love, because I walk our dog all the time, right? And I intentionally have made an effort to connect with people, because I just think if I'm gonna be outside, I'm gonna say hello. And my dog's friendly, I'm friendly, and we're gonna be friendly. It's amazing to me how I will say hello to people. And so even sometimes two times on purpose, because I'll give them the benefit of the doubt that they didn't hear me. They will literally walk by me, not say anything, with a scowl on their face. And I have such sadness for them, because what a terrible way to live. Someone says hi to you and you can't even say hi.
Yeah.
And it shows me the state of where some people are at. They can't even connect. They can't even show kindness. They can't mm-hmm. even, you know, connect with another person because they're so internal with their stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So we're seeing this from in-flight fights, road rage shootings. We've seen that uptick in the Bay, unfortunately. We're seeing, you know, just assaults and homicides and all the stuff. We've even seen a lot of, you know, mob fighting at athletic events and more aggression at any sort of social larger gatherings. And the reality is things have just gotten out of control. There's just the reality of people are just angry. And then we have to understand that has crept into the church.
It has.
And we're even sadly. Seeing that with how you touched on the whole Trump thing. I'm not going to hang here too long because that's probably another podcast. But I think the church has really polarized, because there's some of the church that is totally pro-Trump. There's some of the church that's totally anti-Trump. And then there's some that are just in between. And then there's a whole lot of people like Sean and I that are just like, we're going to be kingdom here, right? We're just going to yeah. keep pointing people to Jesus. But the church is not immune to anger. And if we're not careful, this thing can divide the church, right? That the spirit of anger can divide the church when we're called to walk in unity, to be a counterculture in a world that is so angry.
It's so true. And as a society, and you pretty much have laid it out and made it very plain, but as a society, it's like we've created a sense of divisiveness. In fact, right now there's a book out. I've not read it, so I'm not necessarily recommending it. It's called Age of Grievance. And it's a book by a popular journalist, Frank Bruni. But I thought it was interesting that it is rising in terms of sales. It'll probably be a New York Times bestseller. But he talked about just how our culture, everyone has grievance with one another. You get mad at people. And what we're seeing right now is that more and more Americans, I think maybe the best way to say it is that they're convinced that they're losing because someone else is winning. And when you begin to develop this worldview or this paradigm that you're losing because someone else is winning, it immediately is going to make you have grievance towards someone. You're going to get more angry at people. You're going to begin to tally their slights more. You're going to begin to measure their misfortune. You're going to assign particular people responsibility for it. And then the blame game becomes the country's most popular sport. Victimhood is its most fashionable outfit and garb people want to wear. And the sad part is this, is that people are already angry. There's already things going on. We already talked about, you know, more and more Americans are feeling more angrier. But it seems like it gets worse when life's basic needs aren't being met, like safety and security. Hello, 2024. And so I just want to take a minute and we're going to just define anger. And obviously, anger, you could spend the entire podcast defining it, but I just want to throw out a couple of things. The brilliant theologian Jonathan Edwards, who was one of the catalysts of the First Great Awakening and is considered America's greatest theologian, Jonathan Edwards defined anger as the following, quote, an earnest and violent opposition of spirit against any real or supposed evil or reaction to any fault or offense of another. And if I could break that down, I would simply say anger is an emotion characterized by antagonism towards someone or something you feel has deliberately done you wrong. And how many know when people feel like they've done wrong, all of a sudden that anger becomes that trash fire, that flash fire that sparks in your brain when you feel like you've been shortchanged. And C.S. Lewis said something that's very telling. He says, anger is the anesthetic of the mind. In other words, when you get angry, you're not thinking clearly and rationality goes out the window. It speeds up. You get in this fight or flight. And so it's not good at all. But the bottom line is anger is when you feel someone or something has done you wrong.
You know, here's some stats to kind of back up what we're talking about concerning anger. When we're looking at generations, older generations, such as the baby boomers, tend to be angrier than the younger generations. For example, stats show us that 57% of baby boomers say they're extremely angry. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Compared to 32% of Gen Z. So there's a massive difference between the oldest generation and the youngest generation.
Wow.
And those two to compare to each other. But those two generations, what a contrast. Another interesting stat is talking about anger management. Some experts say that adults, the average typical adult gets angry at least once a day, while other experts have actually weighed in and said, no, that's not true anymore. An average typical adult now can get angry up to 15 times a day.
I think that's about right.
Dang. Yeah. Think about, let's just break this down. Let's bring this spiritual for a moment. I don't want you just to hear this as a stat. Let's look at this as the agenda of the enemy. 15 times a day, the enemy's trying to bait you into anger.
Yeah.
Right? 15 times a day, you're being given bait.
Yeah.
But if you, so
and
if
you're
you,
biting it.
And like, you're biting the bait. Yeah, and you're taking the bait.
More, yeah.
That's right. So if we got to have a plan of action to not take the bait, right? So we're talking today about stats and understanding everything, but I want people to understand, like, you don't have to take the bait of anger just because it comes to you. It's a thought, it's an emotion, it's a feeling. It doesn't mean you actually have to agree with it, come underneath it, or express it. Mm-hmm. Continue on with some stats. According to NPR, a poll taken, 90% of Americans say people are more likely to express anger on social media than in person,
yeah.
Which is not surprising
because
we see the thumb thugs, right? Haters gonna hate. We've had our own, I've had my share of haters on social media for sure, right? Women preachers, prophetic, they don't love it. Okay.
Isn't that interesting though? 90% are yeah. more likely.
Yeah.
So now we just open up an entire medium for people to get angry at folks and express it
right.
without being
Any
able to face someone,
yeah.
right? You hide
because
in that cloak of...
I think it's important when you're angry because that they have to be able to feel it. I think that's the way someone actually changes is when they see the impact of their words. They see how that hurt someone. They see how that tore someone down. It destroyed someone. When they see that, when they feel the repercussions, when they experience the consequences of their actions. But the problem is social media removes all accountability, all ability to see the consequences of the actions for the most part, mm-hmm. right? And so people just keep on thumb thugging all day long. Haters are going to hate. And there is this lack of consequences. So it fuels that fire of anger and hate, right?
Mm-hmm.
So continuing, here's another poll that's really interesting. Again, another NPR showed that 84% of Americans, and this is in 2019, so I would actually think it'd be a little higher now because the world's a little bit rougher now. But in 2019, NPR did another poll, a health poll, And it was, Americans surveyed are angrier more today than a generation ago.
84%.
Yeah, 84. Wow. And I don't think it's actually unrealistic to say that that's increased because of what has happened. That's pre-pandemic. Yes. I mean, think about that. That's pretty crazy now.
And I'll throw in another stat. They say 20% of people have ended a friendship or relationship with someone because of how they acted when they were angry.
You know what? That's real.
Yeah.
I can say I have ended a friendship. I can think of one specifically because they were so out of line in their anger and they said things that were, and they acted in such an absolutely unacceptable way that as much as I love them, it was so toxic in that moment. I literally was like, you're not safe. Like, right. And it's not that I would never like show them kindness or love. I absolutely, right. I don't speak bad about them, nothing, but they were removed from the inner circle of my life.
Yeah. Boundaries.
You boundaries, have to set boundaries, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Psychology Today said something. They said anger-related challenges may be more prevalent in today's society due to several reasons. So we want to break this down and tell you this Psychology Today, and stick with this. We're going to be coming from scripture in just a moment here. But they cited three things, and let me throw out one of them. According to Psychology Today, the reason why anger is more prevalent is because of the stress and pressure that we feel. Somebody right now is saying amen or thinking amen, right? Like, we are under stress. There's more pressure. Pressure is coming harder. It's coming at you younger. It's every side. There's no escape from it. Because even when you don't feel like, it's kind of like bullying. Back in the day, you were just bullied when you're at school around the bully. But now they can go online and bully you 24/7. So modern lifestyles have come with increased stress, pressure, demands, and it can contribute to heightened levels of frustration and anger. And people then all of a sudden by us get on the 680, the 80, the 5 and start going crazy. Or if you're down in LA, the 405, even more crazy. People today face challenges managing their work-life balance, financial pressures, hello inflation, societal expectations, and all of it leads to a greater likelihood of experiencing anger-related difficulties. So Psychology Today, again, is saying the stress and pressure, and I can connect with that. I know that people are connecting. Mm-hmm. More and more people talking about their high blood pressure or talking about situations going on and anxieties and anxiety meds. And I just see younger and younger, the stress and the pressure that's coming upon a generation.
You know, it's really true. And we're seeing that pressure, we're seeing the stress. And another way we're really seeing it, and I kind of hit on this, I'll just briefly touch on it again, but technology and social media.
Yeah.
You know, it's this thing that's supposed to connect people. And yes, there's elements of social media. Social media is not like evil per se, but there is an element of it that can be incredibly negative. Yeah. And there's an element of it where it is causing people to have a platform where they're anonymous. They are given the ability to say whatever the heck they want with no consequences. And I said that, but just really understanding it's increasing a breeding ground for expressing and encountering angry thoughts that are hateful and not productive, right? Yep. And so it creates this fuel on social media, and then all these people get engaged. They take the bait, right? Yeah. And all of a sudden there is this thread of division, thread of hostility, thread of whether it's gossip or slander or accusation, and all these people are feeding it. It's this fight, and you've created this whole conversation, really more than a conversation, you've created this whole inciting incident for a bunch of people, and now like their nights are affected, their moods are affected, their sleep's affected, all because of this unnecessary conversation on social media. So one of the biggest things you have to understand is social media, you really have to guard your peace on social media. And if you need to take social media breaks, do it. If you need to like take that step back and, you know, block certain accounts, do it. I'm a big advocate of putting up boundaries with social media because it is a breeding ground for so much anger and hostility. You know, we've given this anonymous platform with no consequences called social media. And it's turned out to be quite destructive for a lot of people. And it's really fueling that negativity.
It's so true. And today you got trolls, right? People are trolling people. Mm-hmm. And the whole aspect of trolling is that the people are angry, but then they troll, then you get angry, then you fly back. And then this back and forth thing kind of goes. So you're so right about that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. One thing that I think we always forget is it's really hard to know the tone and the context and the intention behind comments on social media.
Yes.
Have you ever received a text from someone and there's like no emojis, there's like periods, it feels very direct, it feels very like abrupt. I'm always like thrown off by that. And then I'm always like, that just might be the way they text. Right. They're just being like very literal in their grammar or whatever. And it's not even a negative. So I think sometimes we forget the context of just because because people don't communicate the same, right? We'll often take offense or we'll kind of be taken aback and it will be a trigger for us. And then it comes to a place of, well, that's rude. Well, and then you get kind of aggressive with them and then they get aggressive with you. And it's all spawned because you didn't even know how they meant that. Or you jump to conclusions because you didn't hear the tone of it. You thought they meant that comment a certain way and you misinterpret it. So I do think you have to like just tread so lightly with social media because you can't assume, right, without context of how often people maybe mean that in that moment, right? And the way it's being communicated via the social media world or even the texting world for that matter.
Yes.
Just another way to guard your peace, right?
It's so true. That is so true. And another category that is escalating anger, and everyone is going to immediately chime in on this in your heart, you're going to resonate, is political and social divisions. Like something right along the year of 2020, obviously with COVID and everything that happened, there was a rise in just division. We all saw it. And we are in times right now, political and social polarization, and anger has become more prominent in the public discourse. Think about it. Like debates are going to be coming up soon, and debates are going to be surrounding sensitive topics, ideological differences, social injustices, and people have strong emotions on that. And that can fuel anger on both individual, collective levels. We begin to see kind of this more visible expression. And this is one other thing. I know we're throwing a lot of stats at you, but think about this for a second. They tell us 9 in 10 Americans can name either a recent news event or something about American politics that's made them angry, while only half can identify a recent news event or something about American politics that made them proud. So think about that, right? 90% say, when I think about politics, I think of something polarizing that made me angry, and only 50% say, I heard something in politics that's made me proud. And this is according to the McCourtney Institute for Democracy. And he's calling it the mood of the nation poll. And the mood of the nation is we've become an angry nation.
You know, I think a question we have to be asking is then if it's so destructive, if it's so unhealthy, if it's all the things we've been talking about, it's causing the increase in crime rate and it's you know, sabotaging people's lives and it's affecting relationships and all the things, right? Why aren't we actually dealing with our anger issues? Right. If we're seeing that it's such a prevalent issue.
Right.
And one thought I had when I was pondering this question is, I think there's a lot of people that actually don't realize how angry they are, right? Mm-hmm. They actually don't know the depth of their anger or how destructive their anger actually is. Because I think a lot of people have actually learned how to be angry because they grew up around a lot of anger, right? Whether it was their home or their parents, they grew up with a very angry parent. They grew up in a very hostile culture or hostile neighborhood or hostile community. Like anger was really, really normal. Yes. They would go over to their friends' houses. The parents were always angry. They would go to school. The teachers were always angry. Everyone was always angry, right?
Yeah.
The culture was very angry. Well, when you're around that, anger is normal, right? Mm-hmm. Anger is just an expression. It's just an emotion, but it's not necessarily a negative. It's just like, it is what it is. And I think that until you actually realize that there is a very destructive side, anger has side, but there's a very destructive side to anger when it's not done in a healthy, sanctified way. It's not communicated in your life, that it is something that you actually have to deal with. But I think a lot of people, when they realize, wow, I do have an anger problem, right? Because there's obviously anger management classes. There's been, you know, laughable movies about it, but it's a very real problem. And I think a lot of people are scared to look at what's underneath their anger because it's often undealt with pain. It's learned behavior. It's a result of trauma. It's a result of disappointment or areas where your soul was wounded. And what's your soul? Your soul is your mind, your will, your emotions. You have a lot of resentment, undealt with issues. You dealt with pain. What is it? What does it turn into? For some people, they're fighters. And when you're a fighter, you'll often become angry. When you're not a fighter, you'll get depressed. But the root of depression often is anger. And people don't realize that, right?
Yeah, right.
Depression is latent anger. It's undealt with anger. It just turns into a place of depression, but you're actually angry, right? And so when you actually deal with your anger, you actually become an incredibly healthy person because when you're overcoming your anger, it requires you to actually get healthy.
That's good.
Right? And you have to get healthy to deal with your anger. And so there really is a healthy process when you're in this moment. If you can have the ability to actually step back. And this is hard. Stepping back from a place where you're about to engage with the anger is such a learned behavior. You have to actually learn to go, hold on, I'm going to have enough self-awareness and discipline and self-control in this moment where I'm going to actually go, why am I angry? I think you have to begin to create a process and a habit in your life. When anger is a normal, you have to stop and go, why am I actually angry at this? And you'll begin to discover that it's often not the thing that you're facing in the moment, but it's actually the root of something else. When you're having such a dramatic response where anger is at the forefront, your fuse is really quick. Yeah. It's actually something that's usually that is deeper than what the current present moment is. And when you start getting to the root of that, that's when you begin to have the breakthrough where anger isn't ruling you anymore.
And you know, sometimes people have learned to live with their anger, as you've said. And then some people, it's so their norm that they don't even realize it's their default mode. They're just angry all the time. We all know people like that. Jesus said to them, I told you I wanted to share with you a scripture. It says in Matthew 5, 21 and 22, Jesus said, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be in danger of judgment. We know that people are angry enough, they ultimately will kill somebody if the anger goes unchecked, and it goes to that extent. But then he says in Matthew 5, 22, but I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause, so that's a key clause, without a cause, shall be in danger of judgment. And whoever says to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. Whoever says, you fool, shall be in the danger of hellfire. So it's interesting. Jesus said, okay, in the Old Testament, you killed somebody, you knew you were judged. But now New Testament, Jesus says, if you hate someone without a cause, and then you go so far as to call them Raca. And I thought, what does Raca say? Does Raca mean I'm going to kill you? You know, Raca, I'm going to rock you, Raca. No, Raca simply means worthless, empty-headed, brainless, idiot, foolish. So it's just like, you're just using like words that we throw around. Someone may throw that around in a social media post, which you could see that any given day on X, aka Twitter. You could see it on different things, whether Instagram or people going back and forth on the old school Facebook or whatever. And what is it telling us? Sometimes anger is hidden and smoldering. Sometimes people don't express it openly. You're either spewing or stewing. You're spewing the anger. In other words, you get angry, you just explode on everyone. But the dangerous kind of anger sometimes is the people that internalize it and they're stewing. They're not spewing, they're stewing. And on the surface, everything looks calm. But under the surface, these people are boiling mad. And if it goes long enough, they will explode. They will implode, but others will explode, meaning they blow up, lose their temper. You'll see it. And perhaps maybe you were angry this past week. Think about it, over the direction of the nation. Maybe you were seething in anger over the way people are voting, or maybe you spoke harshly to a family member, or maybe nothing was voiced at all, but your thoughts went something like, this isn't fair. What's wrong with you? Are you kidding me? You're stupid. What's the deal? You walk out of the room in a huff, you grit your teeth. We all get angry, but you got to remember, you don't want to get to that point where anger has control of you. Sometimes we get angry, but if we stick with it, anger gets us. Benjamin Franklin said it like this, whatever is begun in anger ends in shame.
That's good.
And here's something else that I really have noticed, that people, they fly off in a rage and you just go, man, that did not fit the moment. That just seemed like inappropriate. Like, how did you go from here to here, right? But rage is the offspring of resentment. And some people are nursing and nurturing resentment towards someone. And after a while, you'll rage. And I heard this quote, I just want to share with you. Anger is like a house on fire, but instead of trying to get out, you're trying to enjoy the heat. Think about that.
That's good, baby. That's so good. You know, when we're looking at the psychology of anger, I think this is kind of an interesting perspective, is we have to ask that question, what actually causes anger, right? And I think there's different types of people. And I find these people fascinating, right?
Right.
Some people can just shrug off annoyances, 100% you.
Oh,
and while others explode in rage, right? So why do some, are some able just to shrug it off? And some actually just, you know, they go to like 100. One of the models of anger, it's put forth by psychologist Jerry Deffenbacher, states that anger results from a combination of the trigger event, the qualities of the individual, and the individual's appraisal of the situation.
Wow.
Which I think is a really great assessment, right? I'm going to say that again. I want you guys to hear this. The combination of a trigger event, the qualities of the individual, of the person that's in the moment, in the situation, and that person's ability to appraise the situation and then choose their response.
Yeah.
So what's the trigger event? The trigger is the event that provokes anger, such as being cut off in traffic or being yelled at by a friend or a loved one. The qualities of the individual include personality traits such as narcissism, competitiveness, and a low tolerance for frustration. And the pre-anger state, like levels of anxiety or exhaustion, or they haven't eaten, or they didn't sleep well the night before, or they haven't been sleeping well at all, or the hormones are raging, or fill in the blank. But perhaps the most important is the cognitive appraisal. It's the assessment of the triggering situation. The appraising a situation as blameworthy, unjustified, punishable, the combination of these components determines if and why people get mad. All of what I've talked about happens instantaneously. This psychologist beautifully broke it down in compartments and in a process, but we all know that happens within seconds. You're assessing it, you're triggered, you have everything that you're at, your state of mind, where your body's at, where your emotions are at, where your head's at, and then you're assessing it and you're choosing whether you're engaging in that moment. It happens in a moment, but if you actually break it down, you have an opportunity to respond and have awareness in that moment.
You know, I was thinking about when I was coming up, I had anger, but nobody really knew I was angry because I really could, right, internalize that anger. And I really think you mentioned it earlier, and I'm kind of pulling, going back to something you mentioned earlier, is that anger turned inward, and the depression that, right, those of you that have listened to our podcast know that I got saved a night before I was going to commit suicide. And I recognize now the depression really came from anger. I was angry and I had no outlet. So you have no outlet, and all of a sudden the anger turns on you. But I can remember being so angry. You know, people talk about spitting mad. I was just the opposite. I would get so angry, I couldn't talk. I would be speechless. I remember that if somebody would do something, I just thought that's so far out of line. And someone else might punch a wall. Someone else might, you know, do the old kick the dog syndrome. I wasn't going to do that to my dog. I like my dog. But I would internalize it, but not knowing, I didn't have an outlet, didn't know Jesus. And because of that, I felt like I wanted something I couldn't get, which really, I believe the Bible gives the best and a further clue to anger's origin. So you guys need to hear this. James 4:1-2 says, "What causes fights and quarrels among you? Do not come from your desires that battle within you. You desire, but you do not have, so you kill. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God." In other words, what is the origin of anger? It's you're not getting what you want. Mm-hmm. Maybe you wanted justice. Maybe you wanted attention. Maybe you wanted and felt like you deserved more commendation over your project, over your post than the other person got. You don't understand why. Why are they getting that? I worked hard. I didn't get mine. The Bible says that the origin of anger is not the external thing that happened to you. It's the internal thing that's going on inside of you.
You know, and I love what you're saying, because I think I wanted to speak to married people right now, because I think there's a lot of married people that struggle with anger in their marriage, and they love their spouse, but they're like, why am I so angry? Why do I have an anger issue? And it's often like unmet expectations, or it's those, you're not getting your way.
Right.
And I think you have to have a really honest conversation, not only with your spouse, but with yourself, and be like, do I have realistic expectations, or am I demanding too much, or have I communicated my needs? Am I waiting for them to read my mind? When anger is a normal in your marriage, you have to address that. That thing will eat the unity of your marriage quicker than anything, because anger quickly turns to resentment, and resentment turns to bitterness.
Yeah.
And if you don't deal with that first step of anger, because that thing will loves to cause division and leech onto what God brought together.
Breaks your connection.
That's it. And so when you're hearing this, marriage should not have a normalcy of anger. If you're angry on a daily basis, or a few times even a week with your spouse, this is a good, healthy challenge for you to actually go underneath the anger and find out what's really going on.
That is so true. So good. And you know what? I think in marriage or just in life, it's best to find out what triggers your anger. Don't be ignorant of the devil's schemes. And then you develop strategies, which we're going to give you some before we close this episode. Develop strategies to keep those triggers from tripping you over the edge. Because oftentimes when a person gets angry, your anger comes because your desires are misoriented. They're distorted and they're missing the mark of God. And those are the things that begin to cause anger to become more prevalent and cause them to become more pervasive in your life.
You know, we've talked a lot about the negativity and the negative side of anger, but anger can actually bring a focus, a fuel, and a fire.
Come on.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's some good movements historically that have happened because of righteous anger. I think of William Wilberforce, who was an abolitionist against slavery in England. I mean, this was huge. This man led a movement to abolish slavery, and it came from righteous anger.
Yes.
And he saw it overturned in England. It was this beautiful movement that he carried. And I think you can look historically at movements and people that have changed history because they had a righteous anger. Yes. So anger can actually, like I said, bring a focus. It can fuel you and it can give you a fire. This is not necessarily righteous anger, but I remember like when I trained in MMA a couple times and I just got like plowed in the face, or I got hit really hard and I got ticked in a good way. And I, man, my technique went to another level. I held up my guard. I engaged. I sparred better. My movements, my technique got better because I was like, ooh, they're not going to get me again. I'm not going to get hit like that again. It's like it fueled a fire in me. I got ticked in a good way, but it provoked me to get better. It provoked me to get stronger. It provoked me to like get more tight on what I was doing. And I would see that often when I came in kind of tired, but if I got ticked, it was like it fueled me to do a better job. And sometimes that anger, you can see that with an athlete sometime. You know, you can see that on the sport and sporting events. When someone gets kind of ticked, they just get quiet. They get focused, right? You can see it, and it can actually give you a fuel.
I think a great example of that is in the Old Testament, King Saul. One of the few things he did right is this dude, Nahash the Ammonite, threatened to gouge out all the right eyes of the men of Israel and was going to move from the men to the women to the children and blind a generation so they couldn't fight. But particularly, he's going to begin with the men. And the Bible says the Spirit of the Lord came upon Saul and he became angry. And I think that's interesting. I don't think we understand that what caused, and then of course, once Saul got angry, he rose up and defeated Nahash the Ammonites and just struck them down bad to where they really weren't an issue. We know of the story of Phineas. Phineas stopped a plague that was taking out a generation, grabbed a harpoon. I call it the harpoon of holiness, y'all, and drove it through some people that were engaging in the immorality that was causing the plague. But he says when he saw them, he grabbed a javelin and drove it through them. And both times, like you said, there was a righteous anger that had a righteous expression.
That's right. I mean, those are great examples that anger can have a purpose, and anger can be a good emotion. It's created by God, but it has to have that godly purpose behind it in order for it to be sanctified. The purpose of anger is to provide us with the energy we need to solve a problem sometimes. However, if we simply dwell out of our anger without using it constructively, it can lead to various destructive manifestations of violence, hatred, and contempt. We know that. But in Ephesians 4:26, it says, be angry, but do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath. That's huge. Ooh. That's a discipline, isn't it?
Yes.
To actually go, you know what? I'm going to be at peace when I go to sleep. I refuse to allow anger to be in my heart to rob me of any of my peace. But I'm going to walk righteously before the Lord. So Lord, forgive me if I partner with anger. But God, let me be one that is walking righteously with you.
And that is an interesting statement when it says, do not let the sun go down on your anger. I was thinking like, hey, what he's basically saying, on the day of your hurt, the day of your hurt should be the day of your healing.
Ooh.
Like you shouldn't wait till the next day to get it. And you know, there are times when you and I have made it to bed and we have a difference. You know,
yes.
I don't know to say that we're super angry, but to your credit, you won't let us go to sleep that way.
No way.
Like we may go to bed a little lightweight, angry, but Krista is so good. She ain't gonna let us go to sleep because it's like, you're going to talk it out and make sure we go to bed in a place where there's harmony and we feel connected in our heart and we cuddle and cupcake and all that stuff. Then we go to sleep. TMI. All right.
It's so true. I'm so passionate about unity because the enemy wants to disrupt unity so much. So it's such, you have to walk in humility in order to walk in forgiveness, right? Anger fuels pride because you feel really justified in your anger. So it's one of those things that it requires humility to walk, not partnering with anger. Proverbs 29 says it really well. 29:11 says, fools give full vent to their rage, but the wise will bring calm in the end.
Ooh. That's almost somebody needs to make a shirt, bring the calm.
Ooh.
I came to bring the calm.
Ooh.
We need some folks that will bring the calm to your job, bring the calm to your church service, bring the calm
preach,
to that group that's trying to gossip, that group that's trying to tear somebody else down.
Come on.
That segment of the church is trying to talk about them because of this bondage or that bondage.
Yes.
And it's like, hey, sinners gonna sin. They need Jesus. We need some people who's gonna bring some calm. That's what Jesus did. He rose up in the boat and he rebuked the storm. He brought calm. to the storm. He dealt with the agitation. That's what we need.
Yes, Reverend Smith, keep going. Come that on is now. Good. Preach.
And you know, the principle is simply this. Thank you so much, Boo. The principle is what's inside of you is coming for you and for those around you.
Yes.
And we just need to understand the only difference between anger and danger is one letter. Think about that. You throw a D before anger, you got danger. Because anger is dangerous power. And here's the thing. Anger is a good indicator, but it's a poor decision maker.
Ooh.
Anger is a good sign that something's not right, but it should. And how does this happen? Psychologically, we know that when we get angry, the experts tell us the chemical reactions in our brain decreases access to those areas of the brain that we need for rational thinking. So in other words, when you get mad, you're not thinking right. You go into freeze, flight, or fight mode as your body tells us that we're being threatened. But as a result, you have less access to the rational part of your brain. And it goes on to say, Proverbs 14:29, people with understanding control their anger. A hot temper shows great foolishness. In other words, angry people aren't using their entire brain to access the wisdom that God created them to use. So the moral of the story is don't get angry to the point where you can't think right. You begin to slow down. You begin to recognize why you're angry. Take the unrighteous aspect thoughts captive and begin to allow God to bring calm in your spirit so you can bring calm into the circumstance.
You know, the Bible's filled with warnings about the fruit of anger. Anger leads to bad choices. We see this in Proverbs 14, 16 through 17. Anger loses its witness before the world. Ooh. Proverbs 14, 29. Anger leads to more anger. Proverbs 19, 19. Anger corrupts the heart. Ecclesiastes 7, 9. Anger causes conflict and division. Proverbs 15, 18. Anger is a gateway to many sins. Proverbs 29, 22. And anger is contagious. Proverbs 22, 24. And anger hurts others. Proverbs 12, 18. Woo!
Ooh.
Man, that list makes you just kind of go, Lord, help me.
Hey, it makes you want to get out of anger. Yeah. Hey, we want to close this podcast by just giving you some principles that will help you handle your anger, handle your business. All right. So we're going to run this at you. First of all, I think exit volatile situations. Now, obviously, if you're with your spouse, this is not walk away from them in the middle of a discussion. But there are times when you're in situations and circumstances that you just need to walk away because what's going to happen from that point on, it's so downhill. It's become at that point such this mud fest or may even get volatile beyond that. And it's going to feel like self-defeat. But some situations can become so volatile that the best thing to do is to leave. And it's not a defeat. It's you acting in wisdom to allow a cooler head to prevail and allow the Spirit of God to come in a situation and hit a reset button. Another way that you can handle your anger, handle your business is remember, act as the master, not as a slave. When Cain was in a position where his offering was rejected by the Lord and his brother Abel's offering was accepted, God came to him and God said to Cain, why is your countenance fallen? In other words, anger starts showing up on your face. You start getting a mean mug, side-eyed look. And he said to him, he says, why is your countenance fallen? He says, sin is crouching at the door, but you must master it. This is in Genesis. So God is saying, act as the master, not as a slave. In other words, anger comes. Anger is not the master of you. You're the master of anger. And maybe you should say to yourself, I refuse to let this anger me. And Krista says that she sees it and perceives this as a strength in me. And praise God if that's the case. But I tell you, this is what I do. I just have this inner dialogue like, I'm not going to let anger have me. I'm not biting the cheese on the mousetrap. And you have to temper your temper. I think about that all the time. And you have the ability to do it. Because Proverbs says, a man of knowledge uses words with restraint, and a man of understanding is even tempered. And so this is so important. And you just have to understand that. The Bible talks about in Proverbs as well, better is a patient man than a warrior who can control better. Being patient, a man that can be patient is better than a warrior because a man who can control his temper is better than one who can take a city. And then Proverbs 14, 17 says, a quick-tempered man does foolish things. Act as the master, not as the slave.
You know, I love this conversation because these are really practical things. These are takeaways for you on how to handle your anger by handling your business. Sean made some wonderful points. And just to continue to add to that, one of the key things you can do is have better communication.
Yeah.
But communication is huge. Let us forever be a student of communication.
Yeah.
None of us ever arrive. We're always learning. We're always evolving. We can always become better. Angry people tend to jump to and act on conclusions. And some of those conclusions can be incredibly inaccurate, which mm-hmm. fuels the anger, which fuels the disagreement and the division. The first thing you want to do when you're in a heated discussion is slow down and think through your responses. Don't ever say the first thing that comes into your head, but slow down, think carefully about what you're going to say. Because here's the truth. We got to remember, once you say it, you can apologize for it, but it's really hard to undo what's been said. And not that God can't restore things, but if you're measured in what you say, you're not having to clean up the messes typically of what your words may have done in the past. And at the same time, this is something I think is really important. Listen carefully. Listening is so key. Listen to what the other person is saying before you answer. So many times, I remember I was a communication major, and my major was actually an emphasis in interpersonal communication, mediation, negotiation. So this is very much my world that I lived in. And I'm very passionate about communication and conflict management. But a lot of times when people are actually talking and they're in a place of disagreement, they're already planning their response before they've even taken the time to listen to the person telling them what their issue is. And so you have to have a real discipline and actually taking the time to listen to someone. What are they actually saying? And it might feel cheesy and a bit manufactured, but this is a really a healthy tool. Repeat back to the person, okay, this is what I hear you saying. Is this what you're actually telling me? And often you'll have inconsistencies. They're like, no, that's not what I'm saying. You're like, okay, then explain it to me again, because I'm not understanding what you're saying. And until you can actually hear them, you shouldn't be responding to them. That's a good, like, healthy rule of thumb. When you're actually not just trying to be heard and vent, you're actually seeking reconciliation.
You know what you said, there's a scripture for that. James 1, 19 and 20 says, let yes. every person be quick to hear, slow to speak. And then it goes on to say, slow to anger, for the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Don't you want to be righteous? I mean, who doesn't want to be righteous that has come into contact with a righteous God? And that leads me to the next point. Develop a long fuse. This verse, James 1, 19, says, be slow to anger. Develop a long fuse. Like, it shouldn't be that you have such a short fuse that anything ticks you off and you get immediately angry. You go there. Hey, other people may have a short fuse, but I'm not going to let someone else's short fuse dictate to me the length of my fuse. Develop a long fuse. Think about God, how patient God has been with us in our sin. And we are to extend that same kindness to those who sin against us. In fact, Proverbs 19:11 says, it is our glory to overlook an offense. Think about that.
You know, I think it's really important that we don't let anger drive our actions. You know, in Proverbs 4:4, it says, be angry, but do not sin. Ponder in your own hearts, on your beds, and be silent. It's really like, take a time of reflection. Take a time of, like, you know, assessing, actually taking inventory of what's really going on. And don't let it be the driving force for the decisions you're making, the actions you're making, the behavior in your life, and even the thoughts in your life, right? Anger tells us that something's wrong, and it can energize us, like we talked about, to do something about it. However, if we're corrupted by sin, so is our ability to be responsible with our anger. You know, anger now is maybe responding not only to injustice around us or done to us, but wrongness in ourselves.
Yeah.
If anger is a response to some sin we've committed, it can be a powerful tool for repentance then, right? But sin can also inflate our selfish pride at times. If we don't have sin dealt with in our life, that anger can actually become this place of pride and indignation at perceived wrongs. And so we have to be really in a healthy place. So when anger affects us, it's not the driving force that leads us. And I think that's a really important thing, because we all know, we did some really good quotes earlier, but it's just that reminder that being led by anger does not lead you to often a place that is the place of breakthrough that you're actually wanting. It's not going to produce within you or in the situation the end result that you're looking for. It's going to have a very fleshly, immediate, maybe satisfaction of, like, ooh, I told them off, or ooh, I got my way, or I got heard. But it doesn't often get you the relationship you want. It doesn't get you the breakthrough that you're looking for. It doesn't actually get your voice often heard in the manner in which you're hoping for it to be heard. So not having anger be your driving force, it can be a fuel, but it's not determining your actions. There's the difference. difference. And I think that that's a really important difference to establish.
You know, Keep 100 Tribe, as we're going to segue out of this, we just want to leave you with some things. Understand this, that anger is a serious issue. And at the same time, anger can be a fuel. And you got to understand, I think one of the biggest things I could stop and really concentrate on is that we need to be angry for change. We need to be angry that we do not want the devil to continually divide the army. We don't want the devil to discredit our witness. We don't want the enemy to distract our purpose. And we don't want the enemy to continually deceive a generation. And he's only able to do it if we don't deal with our anger. And anger with the unrighteous expression ultimately finds itself judged. But God says, be ye angry, yet sin not.
Thanks so much for tuning into the Keep It 100 podcast. Make sure to rate, review, and refer us to your friends. And be sure to click that subscribe button so that you're alerted as soon as new episodes drop. Help us get the word out. Share this link on your social media platforms and check us out at SeanandKristaSmith.com. You can also find us on Facebook at Sean and Krista Smith Ministries. We would love to hear from you on how this podcast has impacted you. So be sure to show us some love.
Hey, Keep 100 Tribe, you do not want to miss our next episode as we're going to continue this theme of tearing off toxicity. And remember, relief may change your circumstance, but a revelation will change you.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Keep It 100 podcast with Sean and Krista Smith. Keep up with us on Facebook and Instagram and SeanandKristaSmith.com, where you can discover more resources. If this podcast has impacted you, please subscribe and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Keep it 100.